You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey Ryan, how are you today?
Pam, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be back on the podcast for another good episode. I have a question for you. So let's just think, this is not real and we hope it never happens, but how would you feel if you were diagnosed with metastatic cancer? And how would you feel about coming to work?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And I think that obviously for our listeners, that's going to be very independent for each one in their stage of life and so forth. But for me personally, I feel like I would do everything I could to try to still maintain a work environment and be a part of work. I think that would be vitally important for me personally. How about you?
You know, I don't know. The first thing I think of is I want to crawl in a hole and not be around other people and be around those that I love the most. But then what's my purpose in life?
True.
You know, work is why I get up every morning, what I do, you know. So I think it's a fine line for everybody. So let's hope that we never have to cross that bridge.
Correct.
But I'm excited about today's guest. Maybe she has some better ideas or tips for people that are suffering with metastatic disease.
That's right. And we know, obviously, that there are folks that we see at the Cancer Survivorship Center, as well as folks that listen to the podcast, who unfortunately do have metastatic cancer. And so we hope that this is very educational and important podcast for you guys. And let's just jump right into it. You know, we're super excited to have someone joining us today, all the way from the Cleveland Clinic. And I tell you, Pam, you know, we talk about all the time that we're not the experts, but we're going to find people who can help us navigate some of these areas. And that's what we have today. We have Nancy Del Piez. She's a nurse and a care coordinator from the Cleveland Clinic. Nancy, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Ryan and Pam.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. I know taking time out of your schedule to be a part of us on the podcast. And we, you know, as we talked about with metastatic cancer, I mean, it presents a whole nother set of challenges, not to mention dealing with work and trying to work, or do you work and do you don't work? So let's just jump right in and talk about that.
Right, right. So yeah, you're right. That's a devastating diagnosis, devastating conversation we have with our patients when we talk to them about, you know, their cancer has gone from the curative state to basically the chronic state. So patients are living longer, more quality of life with metastatic disease than they ever have before. We attribute that to all the advances in medicine, all the, you know, active clinical trials that are going on, genomic testing, where we're treating patients, you know, cancers specifically, what's driving their cancer. So we're looking more at like the whole patient and how we're treating them and how that we can get them to live a longer, more quality of life.
Yeah. The advancements, I mean, it's just, it seems like we talk about, and we've had some guests on our podcast talking about clinical trials or immunotherapy or something like that. And then it's like tomorrow that's outdated. It's happening at such a rapid pace, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's really an exciting time to be in the cancer arena. And I always tell my patients, you know, to have a cancer diagnosis in this day and age, their outcomes are much better than they were even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think once they get that diagnosis of that it has spread to other organs, you know, they think it's a death sentence automatically, you know, but that's the beauty of medicine that has come so far that has led them to a longer life expectancy.
Absolutely. And like I said, Pam, you know, it's treated more like a chronic condition You know, and we liken it a lot of times to our patients to like diabetes or hypertension. It's something that you can live with and you can live a full life as well as you have the correct medical management.
Yeah. Right. So Nancy, let's just jump right to this point. Can someone work with metastatic cancer?
So yeah, that's a great question. And it's not like a one size fits all question. Right. You know, that's a time where, you know, you talk to the patient, you get to know the patient, you know, you want to understand what's important to them, what drives them, what is their identity? Because some patients may have a very stressful job and, you know, they don't enjoy their work. And, you know, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to live their life, you know, living a 9-to-5 job that doesn't bring them joy to life. So like I said, it's not one size fits all. You really have to meet the patient to where they are. You have that conversation, you know, what's important to you? You know, what is your identity? I mean, is it, you know, being a nurse and going to work every day? Is it being a teacher and being surrounded by young minds and helping them grow? So you really have to talk to the patients and see where they are. And then, you know, can they work with metastatic cancer? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I guess too, as you said, we know, right? There's in the cancer world, it's not a one. Just because you have this type of cancer, that you may feel totally different than someone else. But we do know, right, that going through treatment and even whether they're not having treatment, they're still going to have a lot of side effects and problems that may limit their work.
Right, right. They may, you know, a lot of the medications that we're using in current day, the side effects are very manageable because they're not chemotherapy medications. So, you know, patients may be, you know, a little bit more fatigued, maybe a little achy, but, you know, hopefully, you know, they're feeling well enough to be able to work. And if that's something that, you know, like I said, brings joy to their life and gives them identity and a sense of purpose, you know, I talk to my patients about, you know, like you have to have a purpose in life, you know, whatever that may be. It's something to get you up, get you moving in the morning. You know, I find that my patients that, you know, have try and maintain as much normalcy as possible do much better than those that, you know, like shut down from the world, you know, don't go out, you know, cut themselves off from their family and friends, and then just focus on, you know, the cancer.
Right. So is there anything that can protect a survivor that at work? Any laws, like any accommodations that they can ask for?
Sure. So there is the American with Disability Act. It's the ADA. And that requires, you know, employers to make reasonable accommodations for their employees who may need them. So it is something that's put in place to protect the employees. And I always recommend when patients, you know, develop any kind of cancers that they reach out to their human resource department and see what can be done to help them, you know, keep their job as well as maintain their treatment schedule. There's something called the Family Medical Leave Act. It's called FMLA. And that will protect their job. And they can continue to do their job with modifications. So let's say they want to take 3 months off and just kind of focus on themselves and see how they're going to react to the medication. That will protect their job. And then, you know, after 3 months, they decide, you know what, I think I'm ready to go back to work. Then they can go back to work on either full-time or intermittent basis.
You talked about the reasonable accommodations that someone might ask for or need while they're going through treatment. I would assume that's going to, again, look totally different per person. But do you have any idea of maybe some examples? I know one of the things, Pam, that we've talked about before is, in being a patient being their own advocate, a survivor being their own advocate, and saying, gosh, I feel better when I have my treatment in the morning, or I feel better when I have my treatment at the end of the day. So we know one of those accommodations, right, is going to be to ask maybe a more flexible schedule, like coming in later and staying late, or coming in early and leaving early. But are there any other accommodations that our survivors may not think about, like, oh, I didn't even think about asking for that, that might be a benefit?
Yeah. I always recommend that our patients, like I say, talk to their supervisor, talk to their HR department, because there are a lot of accommodations now for employees. With COVID brought this whole remote work into reality. Yeah. So a lot of companies now will allow that. They'll also allow like a hybrid type of where you go into the office maybe a couple days a week and you're working remotely, a few days a week. So it's kind of meeting the employees where they are. And there's also different accommodations, like if, somebody's, may be suffering from some side effects, maybe moving their desk, closer to like a restroom or something like that. Or, like if they're, normally, let's say somebody works in a plant or something and they're having to be on their feet all day, there may be some sort of job accommodations so that they can have more of a sedentary job.
Right.
Pam and I talk a lot about how one of the greatest benefits of COVID shows that things can be done virtually. We're able to provide our counseling services virtually for folks that live outside of the Amarillo area. We service the entire 26 counties of the Texas Panhandle. And so someone may live 2.5 hours away but needs counseling. Our counselors are able to do that virtually. So that is a beautiful thing. But I didn't even think about maybe asking to, switch to a less taxing type job or things like that. And as you said, it's probably the best thing that you can do, you guys listening, is have a conversation with your HR person and figure out between you guys exactly what kind of accommodations can make your job easier on you while you're going through. And maybe it's a short-term thing. Maybe it's, when you finish your treatment, and couldn't that be the case, Nancy, that it's maybe not a forever deal until they finish their treatment or stop taking treatment, then things might change a little different.
Right. Patients with metastatic cancer are usually on treatment for, a long period of time. But, it's that fear, when you're first starting, like you're not sure how you're going to react or, you're not sure how you're going to manage the side effects. So sometimes just giving them, peace of mind by, just take a few months off, see how you do. Usually patients call me and they're like stir crazy, like I need to get back to work. I'm climbing the walls. I've cleaned up enough closets. I just need to have, again, that purpose in life. And so that can always be changed. And, we can do the appropriate paperwork to accommodate that. But I just, think it's just, it's not just, like I said, a simple answer. I said, you just really need to talk to the patient, find out what's their driving force, what brings them joy in their life. If it's, like their children are all grown, living out of state, and, their job, brings them joy and purpose in life, then, that's what's important to them.
Right. Oftentimes I think it's the fear of the unknown.
Right.
What potentially could happen if I take this kind of treatment? How much should they disclose to their coworkers if they choose to continue to work?
Yeah, that's something that's so personal. That's so personal. I mean, I have several patients who are very, very private, and they don't want anybody to know. They don't want, they describe it, that sympathy look when they, mention to somebody that they have cancer. And they said they don't want that sympathy look, that pathetic look. They want to live their life and they want to be, as normal as possible. So I think that, it's just a personal decision. If you want to disclose it to your colleagues, you can, but it's not necessary. It's not even necessary to disclose it to your supervisor. HR can help you fill out the paperwork and make the necessary accommodations for you, but they don't necessarily need to tell any, your employee, your supervisor or your colleagues what your diagnosis is.
Right.
Yeah, they have to protect that. I mean, it's right. Not, if that's your wish, you have the right to say, I'm talking to you, but I don't want this out.
Right. Exactly. You know, and some people, you know, and then you have other patients that embrace it, you know, and they're scheduling the meal trains and, you know, somebody's delivering a casserole to their, you know, their house every day. And, you know, they're, you know, using that time to connect with family and friends. So it's just like, you really, it's just really talking to your, you know, talking to your patient and seeing, you know, meeting them where they are.
Is there anything else that they should think of if they are continuing to work?
I think, you know, I think it's important that they take care of themselves, right? That, you know, they, I always say, listen to your body. Your body will tell you what you need to do. So it's just, if you have, like I said, a very stressful job, and a job that maybe you work more than 40 hours a week, I think you just have to listen to your body, and your body's going to tell you, hey, I'm done. It's enough. I also describe, you know, like to patients, you know, especially the ones with the young families, you know, they're so used to, you know, working their normal 8-hour day and then, you know, picking the kids up from daycare and then running, you know, to soccer practice, you know, dance lessons and all that stuff. And I always say, this is the time in your life where you can reach out to people, reach out to your family members, reach out to your friends, because they want to help you, but they don't know how to help you. And, you know, you can just say, hey, can you pick up my child from daycare? Can you take them to soccer practice? You know, hey, I need you to pick up some groceries. If, next time you go to the grocery store, can you bring, you know, need some milk, some orange juice, those types of things. It's allowing somebody that really cares about you to help you. It's the little things in life.
You know, that's so hard to just let go and let someone help. And how much easier life would be if we would do that.
Right, right. And I always talk to my patients. I said, you know, it's not, you know, you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your friend. Your right. friend needs to do this. They need to feel like they're helping you in some respect.
Yeah. How many times have we heard, let me know if you need anything?
Yes.
You know, let me know. Exactly. Let me know.
Exactly.
And we don't. I mean, I'm guilty of it, right? When someone says, hey, let me know if you need anything. And I go, yeah, okay. But yeah. Here's the thing, right? This is that time, you guys, for you to go back through and go, Pam told me, let me know if I need anything. I'm going to call Pam. I'm going to have her see if she can help me with this.
Yeah. And,
you know, take advantage of that and utilize that. That's what your friends are for. You know, the other thing that brings to mind about that is not stealing someone's joy. And that's exactly, Nancy, what you said. They want to help. Let them help. And, you know, we get joy right out of helping folks.
Right. But we also need to be aware of what the patient's joy is. So if picking up the kid is their joy, then maybe they can go to the grocery store. That's not their joy, or running errands, you know, and it's that balance of finding what's most meaningful for that patient.
Very good point, Pam. Very good point. So Nancy, let's talk about what should someone do if they decide, I cannot work. I just can't. You know, is it just as simple as quitting, or are there some things that we can help our listeners with?
Yeah, so that's a bigger conversation, because if somebody decides that, you know what, I don't know how much longer I have in life, and I just want to spend it with my family and friends or traveling or whatever, that is their choice. And it's a bigger conversation. These patients are, you know, because of their metastatic diagnosis, they are eligible for disability, Medicare, and all that. And that's a whole nother conversation that the patients need to be aware of, because they need to, you know, have supplemental insurance, and they have to understand like what the period of time before Medicare will kick in. This is the point where we usually bring in our social worker. And our social worker will meet with the patients, and they will help them get to that point, you know, with the necessary paperwork, and help guide them so that they can, you know, not work any longer, but not have to worry about how am I going to pay my medical expenses.
Yeah.
You have to get all your ducks in a row before you quit your job, because you don't want to lose insurance. You don't want to lose your health care.
Right. 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 And then it's also, you know, like they want to maintain their care team. So they want to make sure that, you know, they're not going to be dictated, oh, you have to go, you know, across town in order to get care. You're no longer able to get care at the institution where you normally would. So that's, you know, something that, you know, our social workers can definitely help hone in on and definitely help them with.
Yeah, it's not just as simple as I'm not going to work.
Right.
Because that opens up a whole nother can of worms when you talk about losing insurance and losing coverage. And maybe that's a very good point too, that maybe that your care team does not accept the certain type of insurance that you'll be on or like that. You know, the other thing too is, I know that you guys would recommend this as well as what we do, is staying a part of a cancer community and being a part of groups, activities, programs, and things like that with folks that are going through the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of organizations out there a lot of them are complementary to our patients with a cancer diagnosis that they can, I mean, there's, you know, nutrition classes that they can attend. There's, you know, counseling sessions, there's support groups, there's art therapy. So there's a lot of activities that are centered around those patients with patients like themselves. So yeah, it's really important that they stay connected to that community. And, you know, like, you know, your providers, your, you know, your healthcare team is going to do everything in their power to help you, but we haven't been in their situation. We've dealt with people in their situation, but we haven't been in their situation. And sometimes it's good just to be with those people that are kind of like in the same situation as you are. Almost there, and there's all kinds of mentoring programs out there, you know, and it doesn't have to be face-to-face. It could be telephonic. It can be via Zoom, where you can kind of reach out to somebody that is just like you, going through the same thing, whether you're a young parent having young children and having to explain your diagnosis to them, or if you're a caregiver to your parents and you're worried about, you know, what happens to you, if something happens to you, what's going to happen to your elderly parents.
You know, Ryan, there's so many resources out there for every type of cancer, not just breast cancer, but find that group, find that help that you're needing. You know, there's so much out there that is for free.
Well, and I'll tell you, I have heard so many people say, oh, I'm a part of this Facebook group that is, you know, metastatic XYZ, or I'm a part of this Facebook group that da 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 da, you know. Facebook, while a lot of times we always talk negatively about social media, this is a great opportunity to get on there and find a group of folks across the country, across the world, that have your type of metastatic cancer, you know, and take advantage of that. Now, we can't vouch for what they're going to say, of course, on there, but... But there is that resource. You're then going to have to decipher what is medically good and not so good. But it is a support network there. But the other thing too, Nancy, and I know you guys at the Cleveland Clinic, you know, have survivorship programs and activities and things much like we do. And you know, the beauty of what you said and how it meshes together with what we have here at the Cancer Survivorship Center is 100% of what we offer is free. It is entirely free. We do not care if you're being treated here locally. You may be being treated at the Cleveland Clinic. Your physician may have said, go there. But you live in the 26 counties of the Texas Panhandle. We have resources as well that they can take advantage of. Like, as you said, Nancy, whether it's meeting with a dietitian, a counselor, we have four licensed professional counselors that we work with. One speaks Spanish, so we're breaking down those barriers to where we cover all of our bases. We even have end-of-life planning, and so we want to make sure that we are trying to fill all those gaps and provide all those resources for you. Now, another thing that I didn't bring up when you talked about, Nancy, when you talked about disability, we actually have a resource that we can help put you with someone who has experience working and getting folks approved on disability. So we do have various resources that are available. The key thing, and I'm sure you guys get this as well, even there at such a big organization like the Cleveland Clinic, is we can't help you if we don't know. You know, as a patient, you need to let us know and reach out to us.
Right. I tell that to my patients all the time. We can't help you if we don't know.
Yeah.
And we're only a phone call away, and don't be afraid to reach out to us. But I also want to address something that you said, Ryan, about the support the support community through Facebook and things like that, I always warn my patients about, you know, like telling the community about your diagnosis, because everybody has a story and everybody's going to share a story from an aunt, a cousin, or whomever. And I always say, you know, you can politely listen to them and say, thank you for sharing your story, but that's their story and it's not necessarily your story. So I always try and tell them to keep things in perspective and get your medical advice from your medical team.
Yes.
You know, on top of the Facebook groups, you know, which are always iffy, but we have partnered up with Fourth Angel for the mentor program. So if you're looking for a mentor program or want to be a mentee, and make sure that you check us out on our website, 24survivorship.org. It's a great program. They connect you to someone not in our area, maybe in our area, that has a diagnosis similar to yours. So that's another great resource.
It's a wonderful resource. And we use that for our patients also, the Fourth Angel program. And it is a great resource. And I often recommend some of my patients that have gone through treatment and, you know, are ready at that stage where they're ready to help somebody else, because it's all about giving back. You know, we hear that from our patients all the time. I feel like I need to give back. And that's a wonderful opportunity for them to give back, is to mentor somebody else.
Yeah. And if you guys are going, I don't know, mentor, mentee sounds, ooh. Listen, the Fourth Angel program, the reason we went with the Fourth Angel program is the in-depthness of the training and the teaching that they do for people to be a mentor. You know, you're not going to get a mentor that's going to say, you know, what worked for me was lemon juice. And, you know, or what worked for me was, you know, I mixed this and this. No. They're there to listen and tell you, you know, and help you and listen and talk about their experience and so forth. That is medically sound. And that's the beautiful thing about it. It's not an advice column. You know, they're there to walk with you along the way. And ultimately, it becomes the person who is the mentee. It becomes their responsibility and how often they want to talk and how often. It's not like, you know, you as the mentor have to set guidelines and say, oh, I need to talk to you next week. No. It really falls to the patient, you know, to really kind of guide that. So we do encourage that. That's a great resource if you're interested in that.
Nancy, is there any other resources that y'all use at the Cleveland Clinic that maybe our patients could utilize?
So, we have a lot of, you know, programs in place specifically at the Cleveland Clinic, but for more of a national program, I would say, yeah, the Fourth Angel is amazing. There's a lot of online resources also that are available to patients. Living with metastatic breast cancer, we have a local group. It's called The Gathering Place, and it's a facility where patients can go to and, like I said, get all those support, the nutrition, the art therapy, you know, the exercise classes, education. They have a librarian there, so they have a lot. And I think that's in a lot of communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you, Nancy, for joining us. You know, this is kind of a hard topic to really give the perfect answer to. But I think, you know, we have shared so much, you have shared so much, that hopefully there is a nugget here and a nugget there that fits in with our listeners. I just can't help but think that there's several folks that needed this information. And I tell you, if you know someone who's living with metastatic cancer or recently been diagnosed with metastatic cancer, be sure and share this podcast with them, because they may not know about Beyond the Ribbon. And it's important that if you do and you know someone, say, hey, you ought to listen to this. Let me send you the link. You know, tell them to download our app. They can listen to it on our app while they're getting treatment at the center, whatever that may be. But make sure and pass that along to them.
Nancy, that brings us to our last segment. We are sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you can share with us?
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to pick just one moment, right? Because, you know, all of our patients, all of my patients inspire me every day, you know, living with cancer, you know, having this, you know, Yeah, I walk into a patient's room and, you know, within the first 10 seconds, we change their life, right? You know, they're a normal, healthy person. And then we walk in there and say, by the way, you have cancer. So all of my patients really inspire me with their, you know, their grace, their acceptance, their trust in the healthcare system and their trust in their team. You know, I have, unfortunately, I deal with breast cancer patients. And so we do have a lot of young patients being diagnosed. You know, and I can think of, you know, one very inspiring young lady. She was in her 30s and she had three small children and parents. She had her parents that were very, very involved in her care as well as her husband. And this is a patient that soon became metastatic after diagnosis. And she had such incredible faith. Such incredible faith and resilience. And every time, you know, we would meet with her, it seems like we were sharing more bad news than good news with her. And every time we would walk in the room and, you know, share, you know, some bad news, she would say to me, she goes, but, you know, we're going to get this though. We'll just get a new treatment and we'll take care of it. Right. It's going to be okay. Almost reassuring to me, you know. You know, and I just became very, very engaged with her family. She brought her children in to meet with us. Her children every year would make us, you know, Christmas ornaments. So every year when I put up my Christmas tree, I have like 5 years worth of Christmas ornaments from her children. And it's always like a reminder of what an amazing, resilient, kind person she was. You know, I felt like a lot of times she was taking care of her care team more than she was taking care of herself. But she just had like the right attitude and she just, you know, kept on going, you know, and it was like, you know, the people around her, you know, that's another thing that I really didn't mention in this podcast, but, you know, cancer is just not an individual disease. It affects the entire family unit, friends, neighbors, everybody. And it's just like, I could just see her, you know, her parents age over this process, you know, over the years that we treated her and her husband, the worried look on his face every time we met with him. And it was, towards the end, she was hospitalized, and went home with hospice. And she was a little confused at the time. So her husband was making those decisions. And I remember going in after work and it was during the COVID period where, you know, only one person was allowed in the room at the time. And I really fought hard for this family because they were such an intact family to make sure that, you know, her parents could be there. We, you know, it wasn't easy working with a hospital system and saying she needs her parents and her husband there with her, you know, but we did make those accommodations. And they were with her during the end stage during her you know, hospitalization. And she went home. Her husband made that decision and she went home with hospice. And it was 24 hours later. Meanwhile, I had been visiting her every night. She was so confused. 24 hours later, she called me, somebody that was confused and wasn't even making sense in the hospital. And she said, Nancy, someone, you know, my husband told me that I'm on hospice. She goes, that's crazy. She goes, I have three children to raise. Why am I on hospice? And she was as clear as the bell. And she goes, I can't be on hospice. And she, you know what? And she became much more clear. She had two more weeks of life that she made so many memories with her family, with her children, with her parents. And then she eventually did die at home in her husband's arms. He called me. I was the first call when she died. He called me even before he called her parents. And he just called me because he just needed to talk to me. And that's something that I will never forget. I will never forget that call from her telling me that I'm crazy that I put her on hospice. And then the second call was him calling me to tell me I was the first call. I mean, that's something so special. And it just shows you how impactful you are in your patients' lives. And recently, this was several years ago, and then recently her husband and her young son came to visit us at the cancer center. And me and the physician that I work with met him out in the lobby. And he's like, "I just wanted to talk to you guys." He goes, "I'm getting married this weekend, and I just wanted you guys to know." So it's just been so, you know, it's just like life, you know what I mean? And it's just like after she died, I mean, I talked to her husband weekly on my way home, and we would just, I mean, he was suffering so hard. The kids were suffering, and he just sometimes needed an adult. He was trying to be so strong for the kids. He just needed an adult to talk to. We got him connected with a young men's group of, you know, with people like him that were raising young families on their own. When he came and met with us and told us that, it was just like, you know, the completion of life, like he can find some happiness again.
What an inspiring story. I know for myself, you know, my patients teach me more than I probably teach them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, life is precious, and hold on tight to those that you love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Reels. Well, thank you again, Nancy, for joining us. Thank you to the Cleveland Clinic for making this happen and for what you do at the Cleveland Clinic, Nancy, for what you do with your patients. And gosh, Pam, I always leave these episodes, every episode, you know, more knowledgeable and truly inspired. I hope our listeners do too.
Yes. You know, every time I learn something, and there's always some golden nuggets in each one. So make sure that you share this podcast with those that are going through the cancer diagnosis. If we can help out in any way, please make sure you give them our information. Call 806-331-2400. Or check us out on 24survivorship.org. We have an app if you would like to check us out on that. There's so many ways to get connected, or just stop by and see us.
That's right. You know, the last thing, just, you know, we always talk about how to get in touch with us, but I just want to remind our listeners, we offer over 70 classes a month and activities, programs, activities, from oncology massage to our dietitian, to, you know, yoga, tai chi, all kinds of things. So we just encourage you to look at that calendar as a big, huge buffet and maybe pick or choose one or two things on there. You know, I'm not a mushroom guy, so you probably wouldn't find me choosing the mushrooms on the buffet, but maybe you'll choose the hard-boiled egg or something, you know, on the buffet. That's the same thing with yoga, tai chi, sound bath. You know, all these things you may think, no way, but I guarantee you there's at least one thing on there, probably one of our fun activities that we do, Pam, that they could find something to plug into.
Absolutely. There's something for everyone.
That's right. That's right. And just as a reminder, it's entirely free. Listen, guys, thank you for joining us on this episode. Nancy and the Cleveland Clinic, thank you once again. And make sure and join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships, as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.